Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Ursula Rudenberg. Hi, Ursula.
Hi, Susan, and hello to you. Thank you for listening in. Person on the other side of the radio, it's been great to be here again, and it's great to have a show devoted entirely today to media and the caucuses in 2016. We'll be leading off today with Stefan Schmidt, political science professor at Iowa State University, whose fame as an authority on the Iowa caucuses has led to many interviews all over the world, and his MOOC, Massive Open Online Course on the Caucuses, through Iowa State University.
So welcome, Stefan.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to be at my favorite radio station.
Oh, and it's wonderful to hear you say that.
You bet.
I know that this is a very special day for you. University of Arkansas Clinton School of Public Service selected you to speak as a William J. Clinton Distinguished Lecturer in their upcoming focus on the Iowa caucuses. The speech will take place on the 27th of January. That's tonight for you listeners, on Wednesday, as it'll be at 5 p.m. and it will be streamed live. So if you're listening to Local Talk at 7 a.m. or noon this today, Wednesday, you can go online at khoifm.org and get the link. In case you're worried that Stefan has a plane to catch to get down to Little Rock in time, let me reassure you that we pre-recorded this section of Local Talk.
Before we get a rundown from Stefan about our subject for today, I'd like to let you know about the media-savvy guest we'll have later in the program. The first who is here with us right now is Spencer Burton, an independent filmmaker who has been in Iowa for several weeks filming as many pre-caucus events from both parties as possible. Hi, Spencer, and it's good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here in Iowa again.
And we'll close out today's show with our teen co-host, Max Ennis, joining us with high school students, first-time voters, who will tell us how they experience social media as it is used in this campaign this year.
As we talk about the national network news, we are pretty excited about the live coverage KHOI will be having with Pacifica Radio. Do you want to give us a rundown on that, Ursula, before we get started with the other guests?
We will begin to cover caucus night, which is February 1st at 7 p.m. as the caucuses begin, and we will begin in reports from the caucuses live from various KHOI reporters in central Iowa and also in eastern and western Iowa to give us a sense of how things are shaking down. And then after the caucuses close, we will begin monitoring the countdown to the results. And as we monitor the countdown, we will continue to air interviews that we've made with Iowans, with experts, and to have some call-in analysts to give their take on what is happening in Iowa, how the rest of the nation is responding, and how the rest of the nation will be affected by what is happening on caucus night in Iowa. It's very exciting. Our reporters are learning national coverage, and we're fortunate to be in a place in the universe where actually people want to know what's happening in our area. So it's a wonderful opportunity for the local to reach the national platform.
Well, that's pretty exciting, Ursula, and it's really fun to be media when we're covering media.
That's right.
I'd like to start our discussion with Stefan Schmidt today by asking you a question that comes from your MOOC course, your Massive Open Online Course. There was a lot of discussion on that about an aphorism from Walter Lippmann, that the media doesn't tell us what to think. It tells us what to think about. And do you have any comments about how that relates to this caucus?
Well, I mean, Walter Lippmann lived a long time ago, and it was true that the media, I think, tried to be very objective and tried to present issues and so on. I wonder what Walter Lippmann would say today about the media that we have, because a lot of the media today is, you talk about Fox News and things like that. They are, in a way, telling you what to think and shaping the news and essentially providing more one-dimensional reporting. I mean, you know, so I think that smart people can still sort it out and find media that makes them think on their own. But I think there's an awful lot of effort to essentially massage people, scare them, especially. This season has been brutal in terms of media coverage, just media coverage of the candidates, for example. The Republican candidates, you know, are scaring the heck out of people with terrorism and immigrants pouring across the border and the economy collapsing and every other kind of Armageddon. And Bernie Sanders has also been scaring people with the fact that there isn't going to be any middle class left, that it's collapsing, and that we need to take drastic measures. Otherwise, you know, there will be only a whole bunch of poor people and a few rich billionaires on Wall Street. And I find that to be somewhat different from past caucuses.
Well, also, the way the – particularly the network news has been covering the – amount of time and the way they've covered the candidate. It really is. They tell you what to think about. You think about Donald Trump.
Oh, yes. And we talked about that before the show started, and you had some horrible number in terms of Donald Trump has sucked the oxygen out of a lot of the media. And it's understandable because the media today is operating on very slim margins and has to have viewers and advertisers want to know, you know, how many people are actually watching a debate, for example. And in the past, those numbers were awful. They were, you know, the debates were maybe very brainy and controlled, but nobody was watching them. And Donald Trump came along and brought with him the circus. And it created an explosion of media interest among people, many of whom had never been interested in politics, but were fascinated with listening and watching Donald Trump. And so that's something new. My own view is that, in spite of the fact that it's, you know, not very issue oriented, at least it's brought millions and millions of people into thinking about politics who were not thinking about it before. And I think that in the end may very well be a good thing, because they won't necessarily support Donald Trump, but they're interested and they're going to look at other candidates and they're going to talk about, I mean, my students are talking about politics, which is almost unheard of for college students. You know, they talk about how well our team is doing and so on and other things. But so it's an interesting year because of that. There's just this entertainment value that I don't think we've ever seen it before in my 46 years of covering the caucuses.
Well, you said something in in the MOOC course also. I guess this was in a little piece that you were doing before Bill Maher interview.
Yeah.
And would you like to comment on that?
Well, I mean, Bill Maher came and did his fabulous show, and I was the warm-up act for it, which was incredible. His show is very political. I mean, incredibly political. And
Stefan, you were invited to be on the Bill Maher show?
Well, the Bill Maher show came to do a performance in Ames, Iowa, at C.Y. Stevens. And I was they have very often a warm-up kind of thing before. They call it they have a celebrity area. And I was the local celebrity who was there to, you know, talk about politics and the caucuses in particular, mm-hmm, before his show started. So I was not on stage with him. Mm-hmm. He doesn't allow any of that. And also I was somewhat shocked that and depressed that for this show they had metal detectors. They you know, there was very, very high security. And I, you know, in the 46 years that I've been doing stuff here and going to things at C.Y. Stevens Auditorium and so on, I've never, ever seen that. But they're worried nowadays, people coming in with guns and knives and protests and whatnot. We're living in a different country in 2016. Or in that case, 2015, because it was at the end of the year, in terms of our fear of how things could go wrong. I that was something that I was not prepared for.
Well, apropos of that kind of security, one of our reporters went to hear Donald Trump over at the Hansen Center.
Yeah.
And there were about 2,000 people there.
Yeah.
And they had to stand up outside in the cold and go through metal detectors before they let them in.
You know, I write a column every week for the Cedar Rapids Gazette. I write for many different publications. And inevitably, I get email that is alarming and threatening. So there are a lot of people who are angry out there. And there's nothing to make people angrier than politics, it seems. And that's something new as well. I think it's gotten much, much worse.
The thing that I remembered from this interview that you did leading up to Bill Maher was what you were talking about, Trump's reality show, and also talking about Ben Carson's. Did he have a reality show too, or he had
Well, Ben Carson, you know, had a very lucrative speaking tour where he spoke to homeschoolers and other Christian conservative groups. And, of course, he had several books. And so in some respects, at least, it wasn't so much a reality show as it was a an evangelical, you know, sort of almost like a mission. And again, as with Trump, who comes completely outside the world of politics. Ben Carson comes from outside the world of politics because he never ran for office. And, of course, Carly Fiorina has tried to run in California and failed. So this year, the unusual thing, and I just said this to, I don't know, probably the Canadian newspaper that called me this afternoon. I said, you know, we've never had three people with absolutely no political experience at the same time running for president in one political party. We've had one maybe inexperienced person who was maybe a media personality or something. But these three are really unusual. I mean, the CEO of a failed company, you know, an evangelical neurosurgeon and a real estate developer and sort of celebrity show, you know, circus guy. Wow, politics really is not evolving. It's sort of morphing.
But you said for both of these people that they had huge followings before they ever ran for president.
And their following sort of followed them into politics almost sort of naturally because they loved them so much. Now, Ben Carson has lost a lot of that because others have come along and taken that away. The other thing I might add is now there is this absolute explosion of non-traditional media, the new viral media, the internet, all kinds of great, great you know, platforms, publications like Ozzy.com, O-Z-Y.com, which I think is just really fabulous. They've got great graphics and wonderful writing. And yes, they've quoted me, so, you know, I'm not ashamed to say that. But those attract a lot of people who normally would not be interested in politics. And with those platforms, which have a lot of other things besides politics, politics kind of sneaks up on them. And I think it helps to inform and engage people. And this station does as well, because, you know, when it wasn't here, there was much, much less discussion of issues in politics. So I think we're seeing an expansion of that pluralistic media. We're no longer dependent on CBS, NBC, and ABC. You know, when I was in college, that's all there was. There was no cable. There was nothing. There was no internet. There were three networks, and they totally dominated the air. They've lost that, and even the CNN and some of the others have lost that chokehold because people can go to other places and get all kinds of information. And I think, in a way, that's very encouraging.
I agree with that, but I have been aware that I was getting an awful lot of information through Facebook from my friends. Mm-hmm. And often, you know, somebody would send me an article and it would have a link in it, and that would take me to another
sure.
article. But this is a closed loop. These are all from people who pretty much think like I do. And I realize there are other closed loops elsewhere that have other friends sending people things that may be just totally false.
Or totally different. But not necessarily false, because they would probably say that what you're getting is false.
On issues, for example, like
climate change.
There are places that are evidence-free zones.
Well, that's right. That's right. And the thing is that those who are interested in those sources would say that what you're getting is propaganda, you know, from a bunch of left-wing, you know, feel-good academics and others. And so, in a way, what it does is it kind of lights several different fires. And I think maybe that's always been true. I mean, the yellow journalism in the United States, let's not forget that. It used to be if you picked up a newspaper, you couldn't believe anything that was in it because Hearst owned the paper and he had a big agenda. He wanted to dominate Cuba or Central America. And what was reported was totally, totally skewed. And if you were a Democrat, you'd buy one newspaper. A Republican, you'd buy another. So we think the media was always objective, and now it's distorted. I don't think that's necessarily true. You know, conservatives always probably hung around with conservatives more and liberals with liberals. And you see it, you go to a university cafeteria, And it's little fiefdoms, little communities. You know, over here, the Puerto Ricans like to eat lunch together. And, you know, the geeks and the programmers are over there on that table. And, you know, so we do like to hang around with people that we have something in common with or that we feel comfortable with. And I think the media, to some extent, has always clustered that way as well. It may be worse now. I don't think it is. Now, if you don't like what you're getting, you go somewhere else and find it. And I actually find on, especially, you know, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, which are three that I use every single day, that I get quite a bit of diversity. I have some of my former students who are very conservative in them, others who are pretty liberal. I have both. And we're members of those communities. I mean, Facebook is a huge community. You know, it depends on how many followers you have. What you need to do is diversify your followers. So you need to go and find people who are completely different in their philosophy and ideology and invite them to join you
to
in
be
Facebook,
friends.
Right? And be friends.
Yeah.
And then you'll get diversity and they will get diversity. You know, so you can do that.
Yeah. I have talked to several people who've had to unfriend their relatives, however.
But the nice thing is that Facebook lets you do that, you know. So it's just like kicking an unwanted guest out of your house, you know.
Well, and speaking of guests, we have another guest here with us in the studio who has a different perspective, Spencer Burton. Tell us a little about how you got involved with the caucuses, how you discovered them.
So it was in 2004.
Yes.
Governor Dean was running for president. So that was the year, you know, obviously George Bush was the president. I was very disgruntled, as many people were. And I was inspired by Governor Dean. I was living in Telluride, Colorado at the time. And I decided to come out and follow Governor Dean. First, I went up to Vermont and New Hampshire for a little bit. And then I came to the Iowa caucuses like 2 weeks before the caucuses. Wasn't very... I was kind of poor then. I came out in my VW van. I literally parked my van at the Walmart parking lot. And I lived in that thing for 2 weeks and followed Governor Dean around and some of the other candidates. And I loved it. I've always loved politics. I've always been inspired by politics. I've even made a try or two to run for office myself. And I was hooked. I love the people here. The people are always... They're really gracious, big-hearted, easy to talk to. And so I was hooked, and I loved it. So I came back again in 08 when Hillary and Barack ran. And I thought about doing a documentary that year. Things didn't quite come together, but it's been in my mind since. Now, I skipped the 2012 campaign, but I came this year, and it's like, this is the year. I had the time, money, and energy.
And the story.
And a great story. It's a great year. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got great personalities. You got great political theater on both sides. You got good races. And so it's just been so much fun. I came in September, October, I believe, to the place in Des Moines. I was here for 6 weeks, went back for a little while back home, and then I came back a couple weeks ago to follow through the end of the caucuses. And I just love being here. I mean, I just love everything about it. And I go to both. I go to both Republicans and the Democrats. I try to see all the candidates. And quite honestly, I enjoy going to see all the candidates. I mean, on all the spectrum, for some reason, something's always interesting to me. And I'm more of an independent as opposed to a Democrat or Republican. So a lot of people have good ideas on both sides. I won't say that everybody has not one party has a lock on good ideas. And as you were just talking about on Facebook, you know, where the diversity of ideas, if you go to different candidates, then you get to see both sides and different sides of the coin. So it's just been great, Ron, and, you know, throw Trump into the mix of it, and you got some excellent political theater. I mean, it's just fun.
When you think back on this time that you've spent observing all these caucuses, what sticks in your mind the most? What's the image that is the strongest?
Oh, I don't know about image. It's more about the feeling of it. It's not a certain image, but it's the sort of the resonance of it.
Can you describe that?
There's something about coming to Iowa, and maybe because I was born in the 50s, it reminds me of something Something a little bit simpler, something a little bit more genuine, something a little bit from the past, although it's not the past here. Obviously, it's up to date. But the people here are always warm, friendly, gracious, had wonderful conversations here. And it's so accessible. I mean, literally, you can go and see these candidates multiple times, get right up to them, ask them personal questions. But after you leave Iowa and New Hampshire, it all starts to change. I mean, especially once you get to Super Tuesday, then you get closer to things, then you can't get anywhere near the candidates, then there are massive events, media events. You can't get close to the candidates. They have Secret Service. So it changes. So this is the only place where you can kind of, where it's small, we can actually get up and touch the candidates. You can actually get a sense of feel of it. So even though it's pretty cold here, especially for someone that doesn't come from this state, it's a really warm and wonderful experience for me, and I just love coming in. Quite honestly, I've said this to you before. I've actually even thought about moving to Iowa because I just enjoy being here. There's just something about being in Iowa that just touches me.
So what I'm hearing in a way is that you would be among people that you enjoyed and with values that you enjoyed, and at the same time you would every 4 years be at the center of the intensity of the political process and it would come around to you again and again and again.
Yeah, something I could – because it's something I think this will be my first one, mm-hmm. but I don't think this is going to be my last documentary. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I even thought about staying here all year. I early on was going to come all year and be here, and then my father passed away, and then my stepfather passed away a year ago. And so I took some time to grieve, and then, you know, once we finally went and scattered my father's ashes in September in Michigan – you know, then I came down and got involved in the political process with ready to reengage life again, so to speak, and something that I love and a chance to move forward. So probably if I lived here, then I could be here all year and I could truly make a transition in my life because this is what I plan to do. Because I've actually been a stonemason. Mm-hmm. So I'm a kind of a master stonemason by profession for the last 15, 20 years. And I've always loved politics, and this is where all of my passion is. So at 58 now, I'm thinking, well, it's time. If I'm going to do what I really love, you know, now is this is the point in my life where I'm just going to reengage. And this is a place where I can really get emerged and become a part of something and do what I love all the time. And it doesn't feel like work to me because I just love it. I love reading about it. I love going to them. I love hearing what they say. I love asking the questions. It's just great for me. I really enjoy it.
So where will you release the film?
Well, that's yet to be determined. Mm-hmm. So this is a first process for me, so I've never done a documentary before.
Okay.
A lot of it's new technology, so I've had a pretty steep learning curve trying to figure out some of these things, how to use all these new, you know, all the new digitized film and print cameras. So it's been a learning experience, so we'll have to see. We'll just have to see if I can, once I package it, see who I can sell it to. Maybe, you know, one of the changes now is all the new streaming media. So they're always looking for content. You know, Stefan was just talking about how all the different stations, all the online stations, and they're all looking for content. So it could, you know, you could sell it to Netflix, you could sell it to HBO, it could be for Hulu, it could be for AOL Online. It could be, I'm not sure yet. But hopefully I'll show it here in Iowa. I hope that he'll show it also in my home state of Portland. So,
Stefan, in light of what you were saying earlier about the direction that media has gone during this campaign, it's been very striking to me that there has been less of the investigation into past failures that we've had in prior campaigns, even though the national network media is not the only star now with all these other varieties. They still, in a way, set the zeitgeist in a way. They set the primary direction, the conversation's going. And the New Yorker did a story about Trump's past as a developer in Atlantic City. But I've seen very little of that, any real kind of investigation of what exactly he really can do among other candidates.
The problem is they've all done something bad, right? I mean, there is no saint among the group. And if you dig deep enough, they've all had all kinds of blemishes and, you know, things where they made mistakes and they've tried to explain. I mean, Marco Rubio has had all kinds of financial problems and you know, Jeb Bush, there are criticisms of him for this or that or the other.
So why aren't
Well, you can find them. You know, it's just that the average American, I think, just isn't interested in them. That, you know, that you need, they need, I mean, remember, Twitter, although Twitter is dying as a stock, you know, it's Twitter is where we are in terms of a lot of conversations. If you can't give it to me in a few characters and I understand what it is and you put it in a really dynamic way that grabs me, the attention span, I just sent this to all my colleagues. There's a new study out from Canada done by Microsoft. The attention span of the average person is down from 12 seconds to 8 seconds. Right now, which means that when you're teaching a course like I am with 115 students, every 8 seconds I need to throw something out or up on my PowerPoint or do something to get their attention back away, because otherwise they'll put their heads down and go back to Facebook. And but so that means, you know, that investigative reporting, you'd better be able to tweet it out, because otherwise, you know, people, you know, the New Yorker is almost dead. I subscribe to it just to keep it alive. I love their covers. I rarely read all their stories because they're like reading a book. You know, they're very long. They're fabulous. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, we just seem to be on a different kind of track where we're racing faster than ever. And investigative reports, unless it's a huge scandal. I mean, if there's something about Hillary Clinton's emails that comes out in the next few days, which, you know, right before caucuses, that is just a spectacular disaster, then people will want to know what the investigative report on it is, and it will grab attention. But other than that, I think people are cynical. They think all politicians have taken money from people and done favors for people and done stupid things. And, you know, it used to be if some politician had smoked some weed, you know, it was awful. But we assume that maybe except for Ben Carson, I'm guessing, that, you know, they've all, you know, sucked on a Bob Marley sometime in their life. And that no longer is disqualifying. And in fact, a lot of people out there, you know, Donald Trump and some of the others have discovered that there are a lot of imperfect people out there listening to them and reading about them. And they're going, you know, I've had that tragedy happen to me. I made that mistake. I went off the road. I got arrested. I did this or that. And in a way, they kind of like politicians who are not perfect, because perfect politicians, there's something wrong with them. They're not like us. And I think that's a very interesting sort of psychological, you know, game that is played. And Donald Trump has been fabulous, I think, exploiting that.
So if it's, so what would you say is one of the strongest pivotal reasons at this point why a candidate would succeed in this climate?
They have to have a jacket because it's really cold out. Or you're talking about the political climate. Okay. The political climate, I'm just making a joke here because, you know, I think people who listen to radio like humor as well. You know, life is so serious and horrible and tragic that, you know, levity is good. But I think people, a lot of the people who are supporting Donald Trump apparently want a kind of a father figure, or at least a rich, successful guy they can look up to who is going to clean up all this mess. And in fact, not go into details. How are you going to deport? They don't care. How are you going to deport people? They don't care. How is he going to make this country better again and create huge numbers of jobs? Because it would give them a giant migraine headache if he actually went through and listed in a white paper all the ways tax reform and, you know, using technology. And so, no, they just want someone who says, I'll do it and just I'll take care of it. And I think simplicity is the word this
simplicity
year around. And it's the same with websites. You know, websites that are just crummy and complicated and hard to navigate. I'm not going to mention, you know, any specific one, but the Des Moines Register's website has been terrible. Oh, I'm sorry. It has been. The Des Moines Register's website is horrible to navigate. And I keep telling them, you know, make this thing easy to navigate. Make it, you know, make it graphically exciting and interesting and clean and simple. That's what people want, I think, out of politics. There's a new website, by the way, and I'm not, you know, I'm not a supporter of Trump. So, but Donald Trump has put out a website called Find My Caucus. I just went to it. I put in my zip code, then my street address. and it popped up. It gave me exact directions how to get to my caucus, exact directions. At the bottom, there's a little video where the woman who is very good at this, who is his assistant campaign manager, says, go to the caucuses. It is not complicated. You know, the national news media has been trying to scare Trump supporters who are not used to the caucuses. And I've seen this done, and I know it's deliberate because they don't like Donald Trump. And they've said, oh, we don't know if Trump supporters are going to go for 4 hours to a caucus. Well, you don't have 4 hours in a caucus, especially the Republican caucus, even with all those candidates. The Republican caucus is easy. You go in. There's a little bit of selling the candidates. Yeah, you should vote for, you know, my candidate or whatever. And then the guy who or the woman who runs the caucus says, okay, it's time to vote. You vote. And then you leave. You go home. You don't stay for all the party business. They've been deliberately trying to scare people. And this website is fabulous. And it's not, you know, it's not for Donald Trump supporters because it just tells you where your caucus is based on where you live. And it's clean and incredibly beautiful. The Secretary of State of Iowa has a website that's very functional, but it's too complicated. And my students, you know, they want fast and clean.
Simplicity.
Yes. So I think, you know, that's what they want in politicians, too. I think they want just straight talk, simplicity. The reason Bernie Sanders is doing so well, he has one theme that is that's just who he is, and it's income inequality. Hillary Clinton has a huge problem because her campaign is throwing out every kind of thing on the wall and see if it sticks on every kind of, you know, women and jobs and ISIS and foreign policy. There's no theme to her campaign, and it's confusing to know who she is. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. It's very interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So it's a reaction to information overload?
Well, what it is a reaction to a complicated world in which we're all overworked with too many things, overstimulated, and we have to, you know, handle 1,000 email messages and tweets and things and take care of them as they come in and can't be very long. And, you know, at Twitter now, they're nuts. You know, they're not going to expand it so that you can have huge tweets. Well, nobody wants huge tweets. The whole idea of Twitter was it's like a little bird tweeting and that's it. So I think they're making a mistake. They didn't call me and ask me for advice. But, you know, people want clean, fast, and graphic. And there are a lot of publications that are like that as well.
Yeah, I've gone to several of the Trump rallies, and one of the first things they do is the woman that he spoke to, the assistant campaign manager, she comes out and tells people just how simple it is, and so that they aren't scared, because a lot of Trump supporters, I think, have never gone to the caucus before, and that was with the big question, will they actually caucus this time? Yep. And I got a feeling that they will. They're pretty passionate about the guy. Right. You know, one of the things you notice about his audience is there are, you know, they're skewed towards men, so probably, you know, a majority are men, blue collar, 35 to 55, and it's, you know, and they're not college educated, but I think for the most part. And, you know, as I've learned from people, most people only get half truths. So if they get half a truth and they believe in it and you deliver that half truth with, you know, passion and vigor.
It's good enough.
Yeah, people swallow it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I actually think that people are going to show up for him. I actually think that we're going to have a expanded electric this time. I think we're going to have one of the largest turnouts for the caucuses this year.
I totally agree. Because both sides have real passion. You know, Bernie Sanders supporters are the same. You know, 26,000 of them come into an auditorium in California. And here, he gets four or five times the numbers that Hillary Clinton does.
They're
nuts about him. And I think that's the same question, right? Are they going to go? I think they'll go.
I think they will. Yeah. I mean, I just came from a Bernie rally here at the university. And there was a couple thousand people there.
Wow.
A couple thousand students.
They filled the auditorium.
Did they feel the burn?
Oh, they did. And they were fired up and ready to go.
Yeah.
You know, and I went to a Hillary event the other day, and it was probably 500 people. And hers are skewed towards, like, a massive majority of them are women. Young women and older women.
Yeah.
More educated. And what Stephen said is very true. I mean, one of the problems I think that Hillary does have is she is not – her message is not clearly – defined and easily grabbed that this is what she stands for. She stands for a lot of things. But you got to be willing to listen to all these different things that she brings up. And they're also – the other thing that I think that she's suffering from is that People want somebody that's authentic, that speaks from hips, knows what they're about, and says what they're about. That's one thing you notice about Bernie. He speaks very straight. He never changes with the wind. He doesn't take a poll. And you know that Hillary tests things for polls. She might, change things by who she's running against or how she believes. So it's very interesting. They're looking for somebody that's going to be straight and quick and can upset the system.
Her main thing is looking presidential.
And she does,
mm-hmm. No, I think
but
she
that's
does.
Not necessarily what people are looking for this time. And as you were talking about before, there used to be that they were looking for the hopeful optimist, the Reagan type. But those types are not playing well, at least not here in Iowa. John Kasich has got mm-hmm. no bump whatsoever. That's of course, he hasn't been here much. And, Jeb Bush has not gotten any of a bump either, and he's more of a hopeful optimist. And neither one of those candidates have gotten really any sort of lift in this campaign season.
Well, one of the things that I've noticed looking over the both parties is the mood of the potential caucus goers is anti-establishment. Even though Bernie has been in politics all his life, he's been outside the Democratic Party. I mean, he works with the Democratic Party, but that's not the same thing as being a Democrat. And I would think the party establishment must be having the hives.
Oh, they're having actually more or less heart attacks, worse than hives, because, hives you can kind of take care of, but... And the Republicans are having a heart attack with Donald Trump. They just – and Ted Cruz. I mean, that's the problem, with both parties. They've got candidates that the establishment is scared to death of, but the masses out there seem to be rallying around people that the party really didn't think would and that doesn't really want. And so that's why this is going to be such a fabulous, interesting year going forward, from Iowa to New Hampshire, where somebody else will probably do well in both parties, and then South Carolina, and then, as you said, the Super Tuesday and stuff. I think this could be a very long, long, long campaign, the way it was with Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton in 2008. Barack Obama didn't get a lot of delegates up front. He waited and then went to every little caucus and every little primary in states. And, the party allocates delegates proportionately. So Hillary Clinton can win and Bernie Sanders comes in second, but still gets delegates. So if he sticks in there, he can give Hillary Clinton a very long run for this. And she may still win because, she should win. She's been in this for so long. But it's going to be a wonderful year. I mean, it already has been exciting and interesting.
Well, thank you both for being with us today and giving us this last little boost before February 1st when our Brigadoon goes away. we just settle back to Des Moines that you can actually get where you can get a reasonable priced hotel room.
Yeah, I heard they were up to $900.
$900 for a hotel room. I tried to get one, and I had to go more or less out of town for caucus night because I'm going to be covering that for Channel 5. So, yeah, it was terrible. But, then in the general election, they will come back because Iowa is still a purple state. And Iowa can go – it's a swing state. It can go Democrat. It can go Republican. George Bush won. Barack Obama won. And they need the electoral votes of Iowa if it's a close race, which it almost always is. So once this is all – the dust settles from the caucuses and primaries, I think we're going to see the candidate of the Democratic and Republican Party both come to try and win the electoral vote in Iowa in the general election. So I think we'll have some more fun going towards November of this year.
Mm-hmm. And to be clear, the caucus night doesn't determine yet the electoral vote that comes later. Mm-hmm.
The electoral vote, it doesn't even determine who gets the delegates because we go from the precinct caucuses to the county conventions where delegates are selected. And from the county convention, we go to the district, four district conventions, one in each congressional district in Iowa, and then to the state convention of both parties. And delegates are picked up at each of those. So we won't know who gets the delegates from Iowa really until the summer when the state convention is over. And then we can count and see how many. And Bernie Sanders may get some and Hillary Clinton others. The caucuses really don't determine who gets the delegates. to the convention. You know, that happens at all the other levels. And it's a interesting process. Nobody follows that process because the media goes, okay, you know, whoever won the caucuses, now we're off to New Hampshire and we're not going to come back again for all these other things because it's just too technical. But, yeah. But those things are important, you know. Ron Paul went long and his supporters went to every single one of those, the county, the district and the state convention the last time. And they picked up a lot of delegates, and Ron Paul did not win the caucuses, but he ended up with the most delegates at the convention and ended up dominating the Republican Party of Iowa. So this is for us insiders here. The media may leave, but for us, we should still follow this because it's still interesting.
But the importance of the caucus night is that it's the kickoff for the primary and sets the tone.
It does the national, what they call Big Mo or the momentum, you know, whoever quote, wins the Iowa caucuses, wow, that's a big deal, even though it's really just a popularity contest. But it is a big deal.
And it sets the tone.
It sets the tone, yeah. Yeah.
Thanks to both of you for coming in. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, and Ursula Rudenberg has been my co-host for the first part of this program on media and the caucuses. We have been talking with Iowa State University Professor Stefan Schmidt, international authority on the Iowa caucuses, and with Spencer Burton, independent filmmaker from Portland, Oregon, who's been in Iowa for several weeks filming campaign events. The co-host for the last part of our program is Max Ennis, who was host for Teen Zone last summer. We felt that the new social media is playing a big part in this campaign, especially with high school and college students. So we asked him to bring some students from Ames High, those elusive potential first-time voters, to tell us what media is influencing them. Hi, Max. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. It's good to be back. So do you guys want to introduce yourself?
Sure thing. My name is Ben Sulzberger.
I'm Paulina.
I'm Alexia.
In one of the Teen Zone reports from last summer, Max, you and Thea Brenner were interviewing Chris Jackson about the hostility young voters feel about the whole political process. Do you feel that anything in the months since then has changed that?
Well, I'll let these guys speak for themselves, but I certainly have felt like voters have warmed up to the political process and they're excited about this election. How do you guys feel?
I'd say I definitely agree with that. I think that the emergence and the rise of Bernie Sanders as a candidate has definitely engaged a lot more people than would have been otherwise, just because he is not exactly an establishment candidate.
I think for the first time we have this like underdog who really appeals to the youth, and people are very excited that he is leading now in the polls and might have a chance to beat Hillary. It's like a story, I guess.
So is the appeal of Bernie Sanders to you exclusively that he's an underdog and that he's anti-establishment, or is there something more that other candidates aren't able to replicate?
Yeah, I think that's a large part of it, just like being against the system. And like, we know that there's a lot of like corruption right now in politics, and he's just like, he's going to change that.
Personally, I just appreciate the fact that he seems to be one of the most consistent candidates that we've had in recent years. I mean, he has a long record in politics, and he's always, I mean, right from the start, he's been fighting for the same thing. So I really appreciate that he's not a candidate who seems to flip-flop where many others do, that he very much sticks to his ideals and stands beside his policy and has a lot of history to back it up.
What about anti-establishment candidates on the other side of the political spectrum who are self-proclaimed anti-establishment? What makes them not as appealing with young people?
I think like Donald Trump, I just would like to disagree with your statement. Like, he is very popular, and he also is in the beginning he was the underdog, and like we're seeing the same kind of popularity with Donald Trump because he's not a politician as we are seeing with Bernie Sanders, because they're both outsiders in both.
So with this segment being a lot about media, particularly, how has social media affected how you see politics this election cycle?
I think especially with the advantage of social media, that a lot of people are a lot more prone to voicing their opinions, whether it's beneficial or not. And
it might be one of the big reasons why we have so many Republicans who are still in the field. I mean, we've obviously narrowed it down a little bit, but there are still so many who are in the field. It might very well be because they do have some form of social media presence, so those people who continue to support them fairly relentlessly is because they're following them and maybe only them on Twitter and on Facebook. So they're getting a lot of their information about that candidate straight from the source, and they keep hearing these same things and having their views repeated back to them. So candidates who might are not being covered at all in mainstream media at all are still present online and through alternative means. And that's has its ups and downs.
So personally speaking, have any of you had preferences towards a certain candidate affected by their social media presence?
I've almost felt pressure to just fall in love with Bernie Sanders, you know, just because all you hear is Bernie Sanders is the head of this new revolution that's coming. Bernie Sanders is the person you need to choose. Bernie Sanders is he's a different candidate. And it's not that I don't believe it. It's just that it's hard to jump on something that you don't fully know about, I want to say.
So you mentioned how he talks about a political revolution. Do you think this sort of rhetoric appeals to young people? Is a revolution what people romanticize about, what they want to happen?
Oh, easily, because I think our generation wants to be part of something big. Just like back civil rights movement, you had people's children they couldn't wait to get out of the house to go be part of something, make a change, because they knew that the faster it happened, the faster change would happen, you know? They wanted to be they wanted to be a piece to a bigger picture. And I see, just like then, the public, especially the youth now, grasping this opportunity and running with it.
So we were talking a little bit about taking control of the House, the Senate. How do you see the kind of Sanders movement, what he calls his political revolution, how do you see that affecting thought about elections with the House and the Senate? Do you think that is making a change in the way people think about politics in general, or is it simply a cult of personality around Sanders?
Yeah, I don't think it's the cult of personality. I think Donald Trump has that. He has this rhetoric that's very appealing. But Bernie Sanders, to be honest, isn't very charismatic. I think it's the policies that really get people's attention and what he believes in. And, of course, like this media and like people's friends supporting Bernie Sanders also. So, yeah, I think people are going to get more engaged in politics in general.
I actually do think it's a little bit cult of personality. I think that Sanders, even if it's not his charisma, but just the policies that he's proposing, that not very many others at this point in the political landscape do fully back. But I think that there are people who do agree with it, or we can reach some kind of compromise. So while I do think that it's people rallying around like the ideas of Sanders, I think that as a result of that, we can see more political engagement. Because I mean, if people aren't even voting in their first election, then there's no real hope for them carrying that on and on and on. So even if you can get young voters excited from the very beginning, then we might be able to see some degree of change. Even if at this point it's mostly rallying around Sanders and his own personal campaign.
We've talked about social media before, but let's move to traditional media, cable news's affiliates. How has that been affecting your view? And has it been as impactful as social media has in this election cycle leading up to the caucuses?
I've been reading a lot of articles in The Atlantic, personally, and also some from like other news sources like NPR or whatever. Yeah, I think it's been like more impactful for me than social media, just getting like a good grasp on what Bernie stands for. And there's like The Atlantic has a lot from both sides, so I feel pretty well educated, I guess, on the issues.
But those traditional media, in a way, has probably brought me more central and shaken my grasp on Sanders a little bit. So it has made me reconsider and and rethink some of my thoughts about whether it should be Clinton or Sanders, because I see a lot of articles there. Either he's not electable or Clinton would be a better choice to govern. And so seeing that does make me reconsider and see both sides.
So when we're talking about looking towards the general election, what are the different scenarios you see playing out in the general election? Is there any scenario that you will vote for a Republican if Sanders weren't elected? Or is there – like what are your guys' ideal general election scenarios?
I guess in an ideal world, it would be Bernie against someone like Jeb Bush, who would probably not win ever. So Bernie wins, but I would definitely also go for Hillary.
At that point, I'd have to reconsider and rethink who the two candidates are, who the two party sides are. I guess is the possibility of me voting Republican, but it's definitely an outside shot. I like some of the ideas of Rand Paul, for example. He seems to fight against the NSA and against surveillance, and he's the only one who's really taken up arms against that. I think that Rand Paul is the most outside shot candidate that there is. So I'd actually like to see Sanders against someone like Trump or Cruz, who are very far right, because I think that that's the possibility where we do get a Democrat back in the Oval Office. Or alternatively, even Clinton against someone who's pretty far right. I'm not sure if Sanders could stand up against someone who's a little bit more centrist, like Kasich. Yeah, but it's surprising to me how many Republicans seem to be quite on the far right, especially leading Republicans, which might also just be feeding into people's disgust with the current political landscape. Which is very interesting to me that we are seeming to go to two different extremes, or at least those are the two that seem most attractive.
So do you see the two extremes that are evolving in American politics? Do you see that as a division, or do you see so many similarities in their anti-establishment sentiments that they're more similar than two more moderate or like a more moderate Democrat and Republican would be? Do you see more of an alliance there? An affinity with the far right and the far left, or?
I think that's a really interesting question, but I think ultimately it does show like polarization.
I think it is the polarization, but I think that you're right about it being coming from the same place that people are beginning to like dive towards their end, even more so just because they're losing some degree of faith with the system, and so. I think it's polarization emerging from a similarity of consciousness.
Well, we have been joined by Lexi Clinton, Paulina Lvova, and Ben Sulzberger. Thank you guys very much.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. In the first half of the hour, we spoke with Stefan Schmidt and Spencer Burton. In the last half, we're talking with potential first-time voters, Alexia Clinton, Paulina Larova, and Ben Sulzberger.
Your hosts for today have been Ursula Rudenberg, Susan Franson, and myself, Max Ennis.
Local Talk is engineered by Richard Morrison. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org, where you'll find an archive for all of the Local Talk shows we've produced since we went on air in 2012. Recent shows will be posted on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, can get the information. There you find lists of our guests and links to their organizations and other resources mentioned on our shows.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or at the email khoiradio@gmail.com. Your participation as audience and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and
see you again on the radio.